session number 12400. This is real 4.
They sent our other boats over to relieve us whilst we went back to Great Yarmouth to be repaired. I can't really remember how long it took before we were repaired, but I think that very soon after that the Germans surrendered, and it became it was VE Day. This ghastly explosion was sort of hushed up. It was never announced publicly, and there were various rumours as to how it happened, and I think the most likely cause was that the boats were too highly concentrated in the harbour of Ostend at that time. And it was understood that engine room rating, as was customary in coastal forces, had dobied his greasy overalls in a bucket of 100 octane petrol, which was very good, a very good cleaning agent. But when you've got a bucket of dirty 100 octane petrol, what do you do? He chucked it over the side. And unfortunately, it appeared that someone walking along the jetty was smoking a cigarette, and they were told, everyone knew that you were not allowed to smoke on the upper deck of a boat, so he chucked his cigarette into the water and the petrol just ignited. And of course there was no chance for any of those boats tightly packed to get out in time. And I think there was, there was, I've heard it said there were about 60 people killed, although I thought at the time there were more killed than that.
Apparently the 29th Canadian MTB flotilla was destroyed.
Yes, that's right, yes. So that ended the European war. We were told to pay off MTB 777, and so we took it from Yarmouth round to Porchester in near Portsmouth and left it lying on a mud flat there, and we'd painted it all up and polished everything. It looked really lovely when we left it. We had our sadness of leaving a boat that had been our home for some while. We were all sent on indefinite leave. I was at home on leave in Chislehurst on VJ Day, and a week after that I was sent out east for general service, and I was sent out in the Queen of Bermuda, which was Furness-Withy line ship, used to run between New York and Bermuda. And I was fortunate enough to have quite a comfortable cabin on the boat deck. To Colombo in Ceylon, went to the transit camp near Colombo called HMS Maina. And I was at a party in the mess in Colombo on one occasion when I found myself alongside an officer who was in the drafting office. And I made it quite clear to him that I would like to remain in coastal forces rather than join landing craft or some other type of appointment. And I went to see him the next morning in his office, and I said, well, I would like to end up with a BML, being quite comfortable ships to live in.
BML?
Yes, a Fairmile B Class ML, which there were a lot of them about. They were sort of man of all trade. They did all sorts of jobs. They carried two officers and had nice accommodation aft with their own little sort of galley there, and so generally they were quite comfortable boats to be in. He hadn't got a BML for me, but he said, well, I've got a HDML up in Port Swettenham in Malaya, which the commanding officer wants a relief. He's a South African. And I said, well, if you haven't got a BML available, I better take that one. So reluctantly, I agreed to take over ML 1333. I say reluctantly because in my Coastal Force career, I had started off as a rating in the fastest boats, running up to 45 knots, and then I ended up in an HDML that did about 10 or 11 knots, having just two slow-moving diesel engines. But it was HDML means a harbour defence motor launch. So they said, I don't know how you're going to get to Port Swettenham, because it was not very long after VJ Day and there were a lot of bandits operating in Malaya at that time. But they put me on the Glen Guile, which was one of the Glen Line assault ships. Very fast merchant ship, which carried landing craft, and we got to Singapore pretty quickly. There was a Coastal Force depot ship in Singapore called the Mull of Galloway, which was an ex-merchant ship converted for naval uses. And joined the Mull of Galloway. Commander Coastal Forces out there was a chap named Fanner, and after I'd been in the Mull of Galloway just sort of wasting time, he came along and said, look, I don't know how we can get you to Port Swettenham. There used to be an aircraft, but they couldn't find an aircraft. He said, I'll come up with you. I'd like to have a look at the flotilla of HDMLs. Can you be ready in an hour? I said yes. So he had a jeep and a naval rating with a machine gun, and the three of us, we went off from Singapore through Malaya. Had quite an interesting trip through Malaya.
Were there much signs of the aftermath of the war in Malaya or Singapore?
Yes. They were still picking bodies out of the river at Singapore, I can remember.
What kind of bodies?
Well, there were some Japanese bodies there, but other... I don't really... I think they may be bodies of Malays that have been sort of attacked in some sort of way, but I know there were bodies coming out of the river at that time. There were a lot of Japs that are being sort of marshalled around, going into prison camps, and also at that time there were the landing ships coming in from the Java and Sumatra, full of people released from prison camps, and some of them were in very sick conditions. The Malays were trying to get things going, and was quite successful in as much as we used to go on leave into the city and go to these fun parks which they had out there. And
fun parks?
Yes, well, it's a Chinese idea that they have these parks where the natives, the Chinese and the Malays, go for entertainment. I mean, they're quite respectable places where you can go into a Chinese theatre or see some Chinese dancing, you can have meals and that sort of thing. And you see the Chinese there with their fan, fan, fan. They were all opening, the war having ended. One could go into the Raffles Hotel, which was it was in a pretty poor state after the Japanese occupation. We had an officers' club at Changi, near where the famous jail was, and the life was quite pleasant. But there were a lot of scenes of the operation, of the occupation. We sort of went up on this road, and the road had been bombed in many cases. Some of the bridges were down, and so we had jobs to work our way across little rivers. It took us a day and a half to get to Port Swettenham. We spent the night at a little sort of town called Seremban, and that's one occasion we went round the corner and we thought we were being attacked by bandits, but it turned out to be Chinese children with their firecrackers. we got back to we got to Port Swettenham eventually, and there we got to the jetty, and there lying to buoys in midstream were the HDMLs. I was. We were both dressed in whites, and the two of us, the commander and myself, stood up and tried to attract the attention. There didn't seem to be anyone on board these HDMLs, and so we shouted out as hard as we could, "Ahoy there! Ahoy there!" And eventually a hatch opened, and a chap got out of the hatch dressed in nothing except just a pair of bathing trunks and a large-brimmed straw hat. They were flying the white ensign, and Commander Fanner, I thought he was going to have a fit, seeing this chap appear on one of His Majesty's ships, dressed like that. So we shouted, "Please send a boat, send a boat." So this chap sort of goes down into the dinghy, sculls it across, and as he gets nearer he realises there are two naval officers standing up at the jetty, one of whom is a commander, and so he secures this dinghy, comes up the steps, and goes up to the commander, who's absolutely speechless at this time, and stands to attention and salutes, the naval salute, underneath this big straw hat he was wearing. I've never seen an officer get sort of ticking off. He said, "Who the bloody hell are you?" He said, "Well, I'm the commanding officer, 1333, the chap that I was relieving." He was a South African. And of course, the South Africans, of course, when the war ended, had no thought but to get back to South Africa as soon as they could. So Fanner turned to me and says, "This is a job you've got to do, is to sort of get the discipline improved here, you see." So anyhow, I went aboard and met the first lieutenant, who we subsequently became very great friends, a chap named Jeff Luton at the DSC. And eventually we were instructed to return to Singapore, which we did with a flotilla. But I was never really happy on this HDML. The crew were sort of patrol service people, and but the deciding factor was that the HDML wardroom had a low deckhead, and I stand 6'4", and I kept on knocking my head every time I went into the wardroom. So as soon as I got back to Singapore, I went to see Commander Fanner, who had driven back overland, and said, "I'm afraid it's no good. I can't carry on in 1333 because I keep on hitting my head every time I go down to the wardroom." So he laughed and said, "Oh well, I'll find you a BML." So he transferred me to ML189, which was the last ship I had. At that time, we were doing one or two little interesting jobs. As I said, the war was over, but I was asked to rendezvous with a Japanese destroyer that hadn't got the signal about the surrender until quite late, and was approaching Singapore with a white flag up, ready to surrender. And I had to take an interpreter on board and a number of Marines to make certain they didn't sort of play nasty, but we sort of went on board, and they were in a pretty bad state, so hadn't had much food for some time, and they're very short of oil. And my job really was to escort them into a berth at Singapore so that they could be taken off and taken off to the prison camps.
What was their demeanour towards you?
They were they'd had enough, and they had indicated that in no way were they wanting to fight.
Were they polite?
Yes, they were, yes. They were sort of submissive, really, and we were able to take one or two little trophies away, and I got hold of a Sten gun, which had been adapted by the Japanese with a rather effective silencer on it. And the only time I used it was to try and sort of kill some fish, but it was an extraordinary weapon. And I took it home with me, well, back to the UK, I should say. And I thought, well, this would be a marvellous weapon for bandits, terrorists. But I chucked it over the side going through the Bay of Biscay. But no, there were other sort of things as well which the Japs sort of left around.
Do you at any time in Southeast Asia have to operate or come into contact with dissident groups?
No. No, what we did do, we had one interesting operation. We were told to go out towards Borneo, and off the Borneo coast, at the southwest corner, there was a group of islands called the Karimata Group, and on one of these islands was a lighthouse that was a very vital lighthouse on the passage between Singapore and what was then Batavia, it's now Jakarta. And we were asked to liaise and try and find out the lighthouse keeper to find out what was needed to get the light lit again, because the light had been extinguished. So we potted around the islands. We eventually found the island, and we contacted the natives. We had an interpreter with us. And the natives were in not good condition. Many of them were starving, and kids, little children with big bellies as a result of malnutrition. And we did what we could. We landed all our emergency rations and told them how to open cans and the way to deal with it. But we did go up with the lighthouse keeper and found out precisely what he needed to get the light going again, and we radioed. It was considered an urgent matter, so we radioed back to Singapore with this shopping list, and two other boats went out with the required things so they could get the light lit as quickly as possible. We took the opportunity of going round one or two islands, but the natives were were in a bad nick, and so we gave a good report when we got back, and hopefully other people went out to give some assistance.
So were they glad to see you?
Yes, they were, yes. Oh, yes, they were. This was it was Dutch Borneo at that time. And, of course, the Dutch government were in no position to sort of give them assistance, because they were being kicked out of Java and Sumatra. So, and there were one or two other little minor things where we went round checking up on islands to see if there weren't any Japs around. And then we went up to the dockyard at Johor, and there were a lot of Japs there, sort of seconded from duties, any dirty work. You've got a team of Japs, and we used to get them to come down and clean out the bilges. And one chap in charge spoke English, and I spoke to him and asked him where he'd learned his English, and he had been a steward with the Nippon Yuzen Kaiasha line before the war and had been a regular visitor to Liverpool. But they were very polite, and they used to bow to you every time you walked past.
How were they being treated?
I think they were being treated well.
Who was in charge of them? The Navy?
The ones up at Johor were. Yes, yes.
The Royal Navy.
Yes, yes. But, so then. They decided to pay off the BMLs, and I went back to the Mull of Galloway, the Coastal Force depot ship, which in turn had been recalled to go back to Trincomalee. I took passage to Trincomalee, and I still had about 3 months to do before my turn for release. And my last job in the Navy was my only shore job when I was appointed First Lieutenant of the Midway Barracks in Mutwall, Colombo, which was a small barracks which had all the dockyard officers billeted. I ended up there doing all the administration. It was only for about 3 months, I think, as far as I can remember. And then I got my recall, and I said that I was in no hurry to get back to the UK. Instead of having the opportunity of coming back fast in the cruiser Sheffield, I opted to come back on one of the aircraft maintenance ships, the Home Sound, which had gone out to join the Pacific Fleet at Fremantle. And then had been recalled to go back to the UK. It had just victualled for a whole year with the Pacific Fleet, was laden with Australian wine and provisions. And so coming back from Trincomalee to the UK, it was really like a cruise. And we had wine with all our meals and splendid food. And eventually calling at Aden, Suez, Portside, Malta, Algiers, Gibraltar. We ended up at Portsmouth.
We've heard quite a bit recently after the Gulf War of people needing counselling after participating in a war. Did that apply to you?
Really, in no way. I was one of the lucky ones. I got through it all right. We had some fairly rough incidents from time to time, but it's always it's a trick of the memory that you seem to remember amusing things rather than less amusing things. After I had got back to the UK, of course I rejoined my civilian job, but I joined the RNVSR, the Royal Naval Volunteer Supplementary Reserve, the London Flotilla, and for some years after the war I did supernumerary trips on merchant ships, which was organised by the London Flotilla. Just for the moment can't think of the name of the chap. Crocker. There's a chap named Crocker who had a very good liaison with merchant shipping companies and was able to get reserve officers on these ships to keep up the navigation and general sort of activities on the bridge of a merchant ship. So I did a number of trips over to the continent and various places. I attended lectures with the London Flotilla on the President and the Chrysanthemum up on the Thames. And then I joined an association. The Admiralty recommended that we form local groups, and we formed a group based on the Royal Naval College, Greenwich. And for quite a time, we were looked after at Greenwich, and we were able to organise lectures to keep ourselves updated on modern techniques which were coming into the Navy after the war. Then when the RNBSR was disbanded, we just formed a club of officers, and I became a committee member, and actually now I'm chairman of the RNBSR Club Greenwich. We meet monthly, and we have lectures which are organised on maritime subjects, naval subjects primarily. But I have been able to keep in contact with many officers, and there is a very tremendous feeling of comradeship amongst the members of Coastal Forces.
And RNVSR stands for?
Royal Naval Supplementary Royal Naval Volunteer Supplementary Reserve.